Welcome to the Addiction Solution Podcast. I'm Michelle Dunbar. Enjoy listening and watching as addiction experts Mark Sheeran and I cover controversial as well as helpful topics on addiction, how to move past it, and other related subjects. As two of the co-founders of the Freedom Model, Mark and I will give you a completely new perspective on the topics that matter to you. We will take to task the Recovery Society's lies and misinformation and replace them with facts, research, and the methods to move on from addiction struggles without 12-step meetings, rehabs, and the shackles of endless recovery. Let's escape the treatment and recovery trap together and learn to be free. Welcome to the truth. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Addiction Solution. I'm Michelle Dunbar.
And I'm Mark Sheeran. And Michelle and I wrote with our colleague Stephen Slate, The Freedom Model for Addictions, Escape the Treatment and Recovery Trap.
Hey, did you guys know that Stephen has a TED Talk? He did a TED Talk in 2016, right in the midst of writing The Freedom Model. And he talks a lot about he talks a lot about Chapter 9. It's tremendous. It's 18 minutes long. It will be a great 18 minutes to spend. So look it up. It's Our Relationship to Addiction, Stephen Slate TED Talk. If you just search on YouTube, you should be able to find it.
You can also find it on our website.
Oh, yeah, it's on our website.
Yep, at thefreedommodel.org.
Yeah.
Also, let me see which way I have to go here. That QR code is our app, our free app. And if you want samples of all the different products and services that we provide.
And there's the abridged ebook is in there, which is awesome. People love that. And also an ebook for loved ones, right? If you have somebody that you love that's struggling and you want to know more effective ways to approach them, that's what that ebook is for.
All right. There's a whole bunch of stuff in there. So check it out.
Check it out. Go ahead. I was going to say, we have free coaching certification live events over the next several weeks. We have, if you are interested in becoming a certified Freedom Model coach, we have our fall session starting in August 18th, and we are limiting it to 25 students.
And it's filling up already. So when this gets launched here, this episode, you may want to hop on that.
Yeah. So if you want to learn more, these free live events are various days over the next few weeks. You can find that information. It's not readily available on the website, but you can find it at our Facebook. I will keep posting the links on Facebook on all of our social media. So you'll be able to find those dates as events right in our Facebook. So, or join our group or whatever, the Freedom Model group, and you can get all of that information, and we'll be talking about them. But the next one is going to be Thursday, the 17th. By the time this one's released, this episode is released, we'll have already done our Friday, July 11th one, because that's what the day this is going to be released. So, the 17th of July, the 31st of July, and the 6th of August.
And if you want to get on our email list, get the app. It automatically will hook you up to our email list and you'll get these notifications.
Yes.
And all these announcements will happen right in your inbox. If you do that, check your junk folder because it might be sent there and put us on your safe sender list. That's important. And also subscribe and...
Yeah, like and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Well, we got through all of that. Okay, so today... So Mark and I have talked with a few people over the last couple weeks, because you'll notice we're only putting about two of these out a month right now because we're you know, thick into training coaches, which is phenomenal.
Yeah,
it's so much fun.
It is.
But we've gotten a couple calls over the last couple weeks from people who have, you know, had the same kind of struggles with, I got your book. And the moment I read I Could Moderate, the moment I read Addiction is Not a Disease, the moment I learned that I have a choice, I attempted moderation. Even though your book says over and over and over again, don't attempt moderation till you read through this entire book. I didn't listen. And now I don't understand why, if addiction is not real, if loss of control and
powerlessness are not real, then why is it that every time I have one drink, I'm drunk? Or every time I PMO once, I'm doing it for hours and I just keep doing it? Like, why isn't moderation? Why can't I do it?
Yeah, there's we've covered this obviously a lot of different ways over the last bunch of years. And we start the freedom model with that line that you can moderate, because it is by far the easiest way to show somebody where they're at. And let me explain let me set the stage here. So
that's a great point.
The opening line in our book is that anybody can moderate. I'm paraphrasing. Anybody can moderate, no matter how bad your habit is, no matter how deep you think you are, you can moderate.
And that's true, by the way.
And it's absolutely 100% true. But what people don't realize is they don't want to.
Right. They will.
Let me explain. They don't want to. What they want, and they don't really fully understand, is they want to be able to get drunk and high because they still have that preference to use heavily, but not pay the price. And what they do is they make a false equivalency to that's moderation. I want to moderate. I really do. I want the crazy to stop. And I don't think they realize that really what they're saying is, I don't want to change anything, or I don't know what to change in my state of mind, in my beliefs. Because you haven't read the 470 pages of what to change. But I want the results now. I want the results now. Now that I know it's a choice, I should be able to choose. You know, so it becomes a very confusing thing.
Well, and part of that confusion is because of those perceived benefits, right? So you have this idea about this substance or this activity that you're doing, that it provides you in the way that you're doing it, okay? It's not just the substance itself, but in the way that you use it, you believe it provides you these things that you aren't going to get anyplace else.
That's your belief.
Okay. That's your belief, is that, and I said this to somebody on the phone yesterday, you know, there's a difference. And I say this all the time, between I find pleasure in that. I like that. I find pleasure in that. And believing I need that. Okay. So if you are somebody that really likes getting drunk, you like the perceived benefits of intoxication, you are not going to get those benefits from two drinks. You're never going to get them from two drinks. And so when you say, I want to moderate, what you're saying is, I want two drinks, not 10 drinks. But you don't want two drinks.
That's here's where it gets really confusing for people, is they equate, oh, I have a choice to, I'm going to want two drinks. So that's not reality. They're two different things. So having two drinks and desiring two drinks, or desiring moderate use of any fetish, means that you have to let go of the fetishizing.
Yes.
So people don't want to let go of the fetishizing. They say, I have a choice, which means to me, I'm no longer going to fetishize this thing. Well, that's not true. They're two completely different things.
Yes.
And you're confused about here. You have a habit of taking an object and fetishizing it into a living, breathing, powerful entity.
Right.
Which is a religious experience that you have created within your mind,
right,
about this object, which is a massive problem.
Yeah.
It's a massive misattribution of ideas. And then over here, you take one little slice, tiny, tiny slice of the freedom model information. I have a choice. I can moderate. and you ignore this giant basket of benefits that you see in this fetishized thing, this religion of yours, and you say, well, it's a choice now. I shouldn't want that. I think I won't want that. But you haven't challenged it.
No.
You haven't challenged it. If you love your Corvette with all your heart and mind, every Sunday you're going to want to drive the damn thing. But then if somebody comes up and says, did you know that the insurance is bankrupting you? The fuel cost is bankrupting you. Your wife is pissed off that you're gone every time. And also it really isn't freedom. And now we're chopping down all the benefits and we're looking at it more realistically and we're seeing it for what it is, that it's just a bunch of metal and gas and it's an object and that it doesn't represent youth and freedom and all this stuff. Now we're having a conversation about what is this thing? What do I actually like about this thing? And now I can challenge that.
You know, when I've worked with people coaching, I can always tell when they start to, that realization starts to set in, because there's for some people, there's a little bit of sadness when they realize that the magic isn't real, mm-hmm. right? And so they're letting, you have to be willing to not only challenge it, but you also have to be willing to let go of those beliefs, which sometimes you hang on to them so tightly because you also have a belief that this is my only ticket to truly feeling these specific things. What are they? You know, and for a lot of people, it's that escape, right? This is my ticket to escape. And while you're hanging on to it, there's this hope alive in you that at some point it really will be that for you. And letting that go can be disappointing and fearful, like, but it's also freeing, but you don't know that.
I'm going to give a great analogy. As she was talking, I was just imagining this. You know, if you've ever had a relationship, maybe in adolescence or even in adulthood, even a marriage that might have gone through this, where you suddenly realize that your mate has been cheating, and you discover this. You discover it through your friends and you're just humiliated. If you've ever been through this, it's hugely painful. It's just awful. But you're really super in love, and maybe you're like I was as a young person, very lonely and very, very in need of somebody to pay attention to me and notice me and love me and touch me. And so sex and a relationship became very, very vital to my self-image and my happiness. And I would put all my eggs in that basket. And then the person might cheat on me or however. But in this case, let's just say they were cheating on me. And it was utterly crushing. And what was interesting is I would go through a period of defending that person.
Mm-hmm.
And I would defend myself. I would defend the person. I would defend the relationship. I would try and conjure up any way I could to manipulate in my mind, how is this salvageable?
Right.
How is this salvageable? Right. They really didn't mean to cheat with my best friend, you know, or whatever it was. They really didn't mean to do that. They're not that bad. And meanwhile, my heart was wrenching and I was utterly crushed and humiliated. And I had to slowly kind of walk back into reality and say, holy shit, man, I maybe I'm worth more than this. Yeah. So then once I establish maybe I'm worth more, that's a change in mind. That's a change in perspective. Then I was able to look at the situation with a little less of rose-colored glasses. I was taking the rose color and I was willing to look and no longer fetishize the relationship in this very strange way, in this needy way that was totally not accurate. I wasn't being loved. I was being cheated on. I was being lied to, and I was being manipulated and humiliated. And it took me 3 or 4 relationships like that in succession to realize, oh my God, I keep doing this. Why am I creating these scenarios, and how am I placing myself in front of this bus and getting hit? What am I doing that's creating this scenario? And And then I figured out some things that I could change in my life, and I changed. The point is, there has to be a willingness to put in that effort to look at things differently. If you are unwilling to, I can't tell you how many times I get into a coaching situation where the person is, they start out with, yeah, I want to moderate it. But boy, they will do anything to blow past challenging the benefits. Yeah. I'll be, you know, yeah,
I know guilty. It's not magic.
Yeah, I know it's not magic. I know it's a choice.
No, you don't.
No, you really have no idea. You really, I mean, I'm talking directly to you out there. When you're cursory going through the book, you're focusing on this as a choice. You're focusing on, I can moderate. Oh, you're giving me permission. We don't give anybody permission. That's fucking ridiculous. Okay. So you have to be willing to say, wait a minute, I got to slow down and figure this out. I got to slow down and read the book and study it.
What is it? So I'm going to take that example and turn it to alcohol, because even at the end of my heavy drinking period phase, which was about 6 years long, right? And I know there are people that have 20-year heavy drinking phases. I know that's true. Or they have sporadic over 20 or 30 years, you know, binge phases where they go through these. And even at the end, I still believed that alcohol was my ticket to escape. It was my ticket to, I don't know. It allowed me to have a pity party, which I wanted, desperately wanted. It allowed me to be a fuck up. It allowed me to have people to have no faith in me, no responsibilities. I mean, when I really sat and looked at the things that I believed I was getting from alcohol at the end, as dismal as they were, to me, they were meaningful. And I believed that's what alcohol was doing for me. Of course, it was doing none of that.
Right. It doesn't have the capacity to do it. That's a nuance that you can't just bypass. And that could be two full 90-minute sessions.
Absolutely.
Just to parse that out.
Yeah.
I just want to make that point out, that nuance, that alcohol isn't the thing that's doing the escapism, that isn't facilitating your license to misbehave.
It's your tool.
It's your distraction.
It's your prop. Prop is the right word, because it's not even a tool, because tools actually do things. Alcohol is a prop. It's an active placebo. You know, you feel that physical effects of alcohol, and you allow yourself all of this latitude to do things you believe you won't do sober. And now the truth of the matter was, I did a lot of the same shit sober. I just, you pick and choose what you see. So you see evidence that supports your beliefs, that reinforces them, and you ignore all of the evidence, which is like 80%, that it's not doing it.
I want to talk a little bit about a nuance with that. So I get in a lot of conversations with people where they say, no, I do things that I would normally not do sober when I'm drunk or high. And I get a lot of that with meth users and crack users, because crack and meth, because they're illicit, typically build a culture,
right,
that is
underground
and seen as seedy or wrong or guilt laden. Okay. Drinking does too. Don't get me wrong, but those have a real, but they're the ones where people say, no, dude, this guy, he becomes a rapist when he does crack. And he may.
Right.
He may. He may become murderous. He may become silent and get totally, I've seen people that smoke crack and just sit in the corner, freebase back in the day, but sit in the corner and do nothing and become frozen. You know, but here's my point. Human beings have a fantasy life within themselves. And if you're a person, for example, who has a fantasy life, a quiet little guilty fantasy life that you live, and then the drug is a sort of culture that is outside your norm and has an allowable culture, for instance, with prostitution or gay sex with the meth gay sex sort of community. And you're able to integrate into a social scene that isn't allowable otherwise.
Right.
The drug gets the credit for the culture that is now allowable because you have separated yourself from regular culture. It becomes a subculture. Right. And so,
that's a great point.
So people choose their subcultures. They choose them. They might go to a shitty bar, right? They might be a high level executive that goes to a corner bar when every time they go home, and it's the bar they went to as a kid, and they literally become the football player in high school again for a little while. And they might cheat on their wife there. They might do, I'm not saying it's always like this. It isn't always seedy, but my point is the fantasies exist within the person before they ever drank.
Right. Before the drug is input, because it gets to the point, and it did for me, where that prop, I used the prop. I've already got a plan in my mind what I'm going to do as I use the prop.
And let's say that you're newly introduced to the subculture and you like it.
Yeah.
Right. So maybe you didn't have the fantasy to have gay sex on meth. Maybe that was never even in your mind, but then you go somewhere where this happens and you find you enjoyed it. And all of a sudden you're like, it's the meth. It's not the meth.
No,
it's the culture. It's the allowability. It's the fact that it's the norm there and that you preferred it at that time. That's not the drug giving you a license to misbehave, folks.
No.
That's a whole bunch of factors that you're integrating into and making happen with a drug, a relationship with a drug, and a relationship with the environment, and a relationship with the social scene, or lack thereof. Some people will drink in total isolation. That becomes their thing, you know? But it's not the alcohol. It's the package that you've created for yourself. It's your binge construct.
Which is why everyone's binge construct is unique to them.
And why drugs don't create a uniform reaction.
That's right.
Alcohol, for example, is seen to create sexual proclivities, right?
Right.
And violence. And somebody crying in their beer and stress relief and anxiety. It's everything.
Right.
How can one molecule of acetaldehyde do all those varied
things? And I've had it do all of those things in one drinking episode, right? Go from having a good time, having sex, getting in a fight, stomping, like one to the other to the in the same night.
So when we come to a place where we have these well-defined, extravagant, prop-oriented belief systems around a physical sensation, a prop, and then we infuse all kinds of meaning into that, and then there's one line that says you can moderate, the very first thing you're going to think is, fuck yeah, man. No more consequences.
Right. Which is not what it's saying at all.
That's not what it's saying.
That's not what moderation means.
It does happen to have usually a lot less downside.
Less costs. Yeah. Sure, much lower costs.
Sure. But that isn't, you don't get high and drunk heavily because of costs. You get high and drunk heavily because of the benefits. So if you retain the benefits, you will retain the appetite.
Yes.
If you retain the benefits, the perceived benefits, no matter how absolute bullshit they are, all right, no matter how much you're manifesting and creating this entire religion and fantasy around your prop, you're going to hang on to that with a death grip.
Yeah.
And your attempt at moderation is going to be a complete fucking disaster. Now, once you do what I did and what she did, which is challenge all of that and see the validity of, is my binge construct realistic? Is it objectively true? Does the drug do all the things that I think it's going to do? And I study that. Think about the resources, the mental resources you put into your fantasies, into the drug, the financial resources, the emotional resources, the belief systems that have been built around this thing. That's what we do in coaching. We literally dismantle this giant apparatus, this all the world's a stage, Shakespeare said. And he's absolutely true. You're infusing your meaning and your stage and your props, relationships, the prop of the drug, the prop of the meaning that you give your fetishes. All these things is the way you in your mind are distributing your stage and all the props in it. And so all we're doing in the Freedom Model is defining the props, seeing which ones are actually real, which ones are actually objectively giving you certain results, and then deciding whether those are worth it.
Yeah.
And fun anymore to you.
And look at, we say it at the beginning of the book, read this entire book. And I think sometimes people think that the most important component to being able to moderate is knowing for sure there's no such thing as the disease of addiction or alcoholism. It isn't. That isn't the most important component. The most, and we spend a lot of time on that because we have to undo that because it's so ingrained in our culture, right? But I think most substance users, heavy substance users, maybe not so much the behavioral addictions, quote unquote addictions, but I think most heavy substance users know unequivocally that they have a choice. I know no matter how deep I got, I didn't really fully buy into the idea that I had some weird disease forcing me to drink. I didn't. Yeah. And I think most people know that.
Yeah. Because it's so resource heavy to get it.
You're
making a lot of decisions.
So I think we all kind of know that. I think there's more gray area, honest to God, with the behavioral addictions.
For sure.
You know, in people's minds. But when we're talking about substances, the most important component, the reason that you get confused, the reason that you even remotely start to buy into the idea that you're out of control and you're powerless is because of the benefits you see, those perceived benefits. And they can be so, like, you make it such a habit that you don't even think about it. You do it so mindlessly that you start to think, well, maybe I am addicted. Maybe there is something compelling me. And so when you add that in to those perceived benefits, it really does feel like a trap that you can't get out of.
Yeah. I'm not saying that this may not be a labyrinth that you need to deconstruct that you've gotten yourself into. It took me a long time to figure all this out.
Yeah.
But I do know this. I can take a very complex situation and in three 90-minute sessions get 90% of the way there.
Yeah. With our workshop and online program.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. There's a lot of, and the person has to be willing to do all the homework I assign. They have to be serious and they have to be willing to challenge their beliefs right from get-go. And have a willingness to say, yes, I am willing. Now they get, a lot of times we get in that first and second sessions where the bulk of the belief sort of change is laid out and they go, holy shit, I didn't realize. Just in my first session, for example, we'll have this sort of open dialogue with the Socratic method where I'm asking questions and I'll write down how many times that person will say, yeah, alcohol makes me, my fetish does this for me. And I'll write it down and I'll have a page.
Oh, yeah.
Where they're like, it makes me, it does this, it. And it doesn't do any of it.
Nope. You're doing it.
And so they go, oh my God, I said that. I say, you said it 35 times.
But everybody says it.
That's right.
Even people that don't have quote unquote addictions will say, yeah, we're going to go out drinking tonight. It's going to relax me. You know what I mean? Like people just talk that way. That is in our culture, right? We credit substances for all kinds of things that they can't do for us. When we say to people, yeah, you said all of these things, that is what you believe. You know, you're Mark always says your actions belie your truth. You really believe that you're getting shit. I would get drunk every night if I believed all those things too.
We did.
We did.
No, we did.
But I still would if I did.
Yeah.
Right?
Right to my death.
Yep.
100%. And this is why people drink themselves or drug themselves to death, is because they believe right to the very bitter end that the drug is doing something miraculous that it's not doing. And they are beating their head against the wall and not understanding why they keep doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
So if you're one of those people, we can help you sort that out, and you can move on from this for good.
And, you know, I want to address something. I want to put it right out there. And because it's, you know, I see it around in our group and on, you know, and different on YouTube and comments and stuff about the cost of our coaching package. I'd say the cost of our coaching package is probably the best investment anybody can ever make. If we can get you, you know, if we can provide you the information and help you to get, and some people, 100% of the way there, but 80 to 90% of the way to solving your problem in 3 90-minute sessions, what is that worth to you?
Yeah, I don't know anybody else that has that expertise but our group.
And yeah, we are the best in the world at this.
Yep.
You know, there are really smart people, neuroscientists, and, you know, all kinds of people who don't understand how to solve addiction.
Because they don't understand that you are a mind, that you are a thinking, problem-solving creature, and that you have everything you need to take care of this, and that it's not a brain-centered problem. And it never has been, and it never will be a brain-centered problem. The only part with the brain that we care about is the detox process, because once That's the it. Detox process is done, if it's even needed, in the vast majority, it's not. You're just like everybody else. You're thinking your way to a solution, just like you're thinking your way to getting drunk and high. It's all a function of your belief system and your defining and giving meaning to your props in your life. And once you realize that you have the capacity to change that meaning and adapt and see it for more accurately what it objectively is, you will devalue that experience quickly, and you will move on with your life as if it was never a problem.
So if you want to learn how to help people solve addiction, and you want to be the best in the world at it, come and get trained by us.
Yeah. So take our coaching certification program, get enrolled today. We'll have the links underneath this for that, right?
Yeah. We can put the links up on our YouTube channel. So if you're listening to this on Spotify or on our website, go to the Freedom Model YouTube channel, and the links, to the coaching certification will be there. You can also go right to our website, and we have a certification page. It's about to be rewritten, but there's an application on there. If you fill out that application, it automatically puts you in our system. So you'll be getting the updates on everything, and I'll immediately send you the links to enroll. We've now implemented that if you want to get in to one of these certification sessions, that we have coming up, our fall session or our winter session, you can get right on, pay the deposit, and your spot will be reserved.
Yeah, there's only 25 spots, and they're being taken now. So you might want to get involved quickly.
It's an intensive course, but it's going to be a lot of fun. You'll be working with Mark and I directly. That's why we're limiting it to 25 people, because we're going to have individual meetings with people, and train, like group training sessions, individual training sessions. And a lot of it is also online as well. So it'll be, you know, you'll be able to work around your schedule if you're obviously a working person. And we're making it so, you know, professionals and people with day jobs can actually get through the course in just about 8 weeks. Go to thefreedommodel.org/certification. And you'll see the information there and the application to fill out.
All right, everybody. Take care.
Thanks. Bye.